It is Thursday, August 16th, 2012. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Christina Thomas. Support for KUAF comes from Northwest Arkansas Media, publishers of Northwest Arkansas Times, Springdale and Rogers Morning News, Benton County Daily Record, and the Northwest Arkansas edition of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, offering dedicated and comprehensive election coverage at nwavote.com and a political, business, and entertainment blog at nwasource.com.
On this edition of Ozarks, the first Hindu temple in Northwest Arkansas, flying over Little Rock, and a prairie close to our front door.
Plus, another massive round of interstate work will begin soon in Arkansas, and Becca Martin Brown from Northwest Arkansas Newspapers will give us her recommendations for a Thursday night.
First, Walmart Stores Incorporated reported second quarter earnings earlier today. The retail giant posted net sales of $113.5 billion. That's a 4.5% increase from the same period last year. Net sales would have been higher at $115.7 billion, but currency exchange rate fluctuations lowered the final total. Walmart also reported a positive increase of comparable store sales by 2.2%, making four consecutive quarters of same-store sales for the company's domestic stores. Net sales at Walmart's international division also grew by 6.4%.
For the first time in weeks, the continuing drought in Arkansas did not intensify over the past week. 53.6% of Arkansas is in exceptional drought, virtually the same as the 53.3% reported a week ago. The portions of Arkansas in severe or extreme drought saw similar increases by less than a full percentage point. In the South region, which includes Oklahoma, Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, Tennessee, and Arkansas, the overall drought picture worsened. Just over 11% of the entire region is in exceptional drought, compared to 8% last week.
When new Springdale Fire Chief Mike Irwin starts work August 27th, he'll be met with the task of building three new fire stations. Assistant Fire Chief Kevin McDonald says that the timing couldn't be more perfect for the new chief, who comes to Springdale from Pocatello, Idaho.
We're all very optimistic that Mike will come in and do good things. He's definitely been given a gift. Fire chiefs across the country always ponder how they're going to expand and how they're going to be able to negotiate to get the funds necessary to rebuild stations, to buy apparatus. So this couldn't come at a better time for him as a new chief or our department, because, like I say, to come in and have $9 million and have a three-year window, mandated window, to complete those projects in is truly a blessing for all of us.
Voters in Springdale Tuesday approved three bond issues totaling $71 million, including $9 million for the construction of the three new fire stations. Two of the stations will replace stations that were originally built in the 1960s. Those stations have room for just one fire engine. In addition, McDonald says that as the city has expanded, response times have increased for areas toward edges of the city. That's why Station 3 will be moved further to the north. Station 2 will be moved to the south-central part of town.
Most area schools are starting classes in the coming week, and one area district is seeing an increase in enrollment in its elementary schools. This school year, the Rogers School District will welcome more than 1,200 kindergartners to school for the first time. Virginia Abernathy, the district's assistant superintendent of elementary curriculum instruction, says that it is more kindergarten students than the district has ever had.
We know Rogers is growing, but we don't know why there's so many more kindergarten students, you know, than we've ever had, because our kindergarten enrollment is larger than any of our other elementary grades.
Overall, the district will have 150 more students in grades K through 5 than it did at the end of the last school year. Abernathy says that although there may be more students in the district's 14 elementary schools, the district is suited to accommodate all of those students.
You know, occasionally we run out of space at a particular boundary school and we transport them to another school. But at this point, we're not ready to say we'll have to do that because we're still watching enrollment. Many times parents have verified that, yes, they're going to be attending that school, but they move. Things change in their life, and they don't actually show up. So we have to watch that. There'll be some movement. Before school starts, we'll still have movement occurring. So we just watch it daily, and when we get to a point that we feel like it's going to be necessary to have an additional teacher, then at that point, we hire.
Abernathy says that in her time at the district, administrators have always known by the second week of school that enough teachers are in the right places.
A Springdale Street will reopen at 6 tomorrow morning after being closed for several weeks. Emma Avenue has been closed to allow for construction of a raised crossing that will be part of the Razorback Regional Greenway. Sam Goh, director of the city's Public Works Department, explains why the streets were closed for the construction.
Of course, we always hate to close a street, but in the case of these raised concrete crosswalks, because they're constructed out of concrete, it has to go through a curing process before we can put heavy traffic back over it.
Concrete crossings were constructed from Johnson and Meadow Avenues as well. Goad says that the crossings are complete, save for the installation of light-emitting diodes at the crossings. He says that the embedded lights will make it safer for pedestrians to cross the three streets once the trail is complete.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals were on the road last night, opening a three-game series in Midland, Texas, against the Rockhounds. The Naturals started off leading with two runs in the first, one in the third, and one in the sixth. But five runs for the Rockhounds in the bottom of the sixth won them the game. Final score, Rockhounds 7, Naturals 5. The Naturals will play the Rockhounds again at 7 o'clock tonight.
Overcast tonight, 60% chance of rain and thunderstorms. Lows in the mid to upper 60s. Tomorrow, overcast again with highs from the mid 80s to low 90s. 30% chance of rain in northwest Arkansas. Chance of rain in the River Valley, 40% tomorrow. And tomorrow night, partly cloudy, lows in the low to mid-60s. Chance of rain in northwest Arkansas, 30% Friday night, 40% for the Arkansas River Valley.
Sharmila Sanka, secretary of the Hindu Association of Northwest Arkansas, or HANWA, washes her hands and feet in the entryway of the first Hindu temple in northwest Arkansas. They held its grand opening last month.
As I said, we wash our feet here before entering the temple. We remove our sandals outside when we enter the temple because it's very auspicious inside and we do not want to bring out any germs or anything inside. That is the reason we don't wear sandals inside the temple.
On either side of the door leading into the temple, there are basins to rinse one's feet, each equipped with two shower faucets about 3 feet off the ground. A towel is on the floor to dry one's feet before entering the temple. Inside the bright and open room, a ritual is being performed. About 45 people sit on the temple floor, though it could hold 200. They sit atop blankets, facing a statue of the Hindu god and his six forms. Below them, the temple's priest is performing a ritual, chanting mantras to the people. This ritual is part of the grand opening of the temple. Though its grand opening was last month, the temple will stay open for 40 days, called mandala.
It's one cycle for us, basically. So when we take a puja and everything, doing it for one mandala means like it's basically completion of that full course.
That's Uma Balaraman, Hanwa's vice president.
So basically for us, like the first 40 days is very important in a temple building because that's the time we need to chant, meditate on Lord's name and God's name so that like we bring more sanctity and also that vibration into the temple. So that is very important for us.
Though the temple will be open every day after the first 40, there will be no obstacles during those first 40. So, how did this temple come about? In 1990, a very small group of Hindu people, just a few families, began meeting in homes. In 1999, there were enough people of Indian and Hindu heritage to form an official organization, many of them living in the Bentonville area due to their positions with Walmart. The nonprofit Hindu Association, HANWA, was formed, with the mission to support and enlighten the Hindu way of life.
Because our kids are brought up here, so they're not completely sure of their Indian culture. So this is a very good way of promoting our culture to our kids. And also it's a place of worship to meet the religious, charitable, cultural, and social needs of the community. And we even organize religious, charitable events here and several educational and social activities.
As more and more Hindu people moved to the area, the community, now at over 2,500, began to outgrow meeting in homes. The need for a temple became clear. In 2002, HANWA got a good deal on some land near Gentry, with the aim of building a temple there. But it was difficult to access and would need expensive road improvements. In 2009, they purchased land in Bentonville and held a groundbreaking that same year. The land also has a decent-looking house, so why couldn't Hanwha just meet and perform prayers and rituals there?
When we say temple, it's not just made of bricks or something. Like this, we could have used this house as a temple, but whereas we wanted to do it from the scratch, because there are so many rituals involved in building a temple.
And Uma?
This was an house before. We were using this as a temporary stopgate solution for doing some prayers and everything. But when it comes to getting, as Sharmila mentioned, getting the divine powers and everything, so we have a lot of processes and rituals, and we chant a lot of mantras in order for us to do that. So that like we get that divine powers into the temple, so that when people come into the temple, they feel that vibration and they get that inner peace and everything.
Local architects rather than Indian worked on the construction of the temple. Uma says they went above and beyond researching what goes into a temple, though things were done a bit differently than it would have been done in India. The architects were able to customize local materials to uphold the Indian customs, maintaining the auspiciousness that was needed for such a temple. One such aspect is the golden tower that is over the main entryway into the building.
For us, of course, the divinity is spread in our whole of cosmos, right? So what it is this is the kalasam is one of the important ingredients in every Hindu temple, basically. So we are kind of capturing the divine powers from the sky through that into the temple. That's we did a lot of havans and pujas to the kalasam for us to get it ready and prepared to accept those divine grace from the sky, and that is what it is. So like that is the important piece of celebration for us in temple opening.
Light and divine powers are also let in through windows that line the ceiling inside the temple. The tower here is a fiberglass coliseum from Ohio, much different from the traditional gold you'd see in India. One reason for the fiberglass was the budget. Building a temple of this nature costs money. Hanwha raised money in various methods. One way was a fundraiser, a brick sponsorship program, wherein members of the community donated an amount for a single brick, writing their names on it or their wish in the Lord's name. All in all, about 800 bricks were sponsored and used in the construction of a smaller temple that rests in front of the building. This model temple holds Ganesha, the deity who removes obstacles. Hanwha also had to take out a loan in the amount of $550,000. They had a goal to raise $200,000 by the grand opening, which they did. Uma says they hope to have the entire amount paid off by the end of 2013.
But at the end of the day, loan and the dollars is one part of it, but the other part is the big thing is the spiritual thing that people are coming to the temple towards.
And people did come. Hundreds of people came to the three-day grand opening, giving devotees a chance to focus on that spiritual nature. They performed many rituals, prayers, mantras, chanting to ensure the divinity and auspiciousness of the building. Sharmila and Uma both say that this would not have been possible without the community, both Hindu and non-Hindu. Over 200 volunteers helped during the opening and are still helping. Hanwha is also devoted to the community, providing charity and volunteering themselves. With that, Sharmila says that the temple is open to anyone.
As you know, most of us were working for Walmart here, and that's the Walmart policy and culture, right? Like inclusion of diversity, like different kinds of communities. We all work together in the same way. Even here, we are not restricting this. We are not limiting this only to Indians.
She says that everyone is invited to this beautiful, bright temple on the western side of Bentonville. The square building sits among some grass, the perfect place to leave your shoes. The building is outlined with colorful, loopy, and floral paintings. Sharmila says that this is something that is traditionally done with turmeric in India, in order to keep the germs away from inside the temple. For more information, visit nwahindutemple.org. And namaste.
When Paul Ryan was selected to be Mitt Romney's running mate, we enjoyed a period of time when we were able to debate the big ideas at stake in this election. And then after about an hour, everybody got bored and started calling each other unhinged. I'm Peter Sagal. Join us as we do our best to debase the debate even further on this week's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the news quiz from NPR.
Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me can be heard Sunday at noon on KUAF 91.3 FM. This is Ozarks at Large. Direct democracy. It's the process that allows citizens to get petitions on the ballot to consider changes to the Arkansas Constitution or the laws of our state. You probably remember the proposals for casinos and medical marijuana, the severance tax, even ethics reform, have all made efforts this year to gain ballot access. Dr. Jay Barth, a professor of political science at Hendricks College, has taken a look at the 70-year journey of this uniquely Arkansan process. Roby Brock from our content partner Talk Business recently sat down with Dr. Jay Barth to talk more about direct democracy in Arkansas.
Arkansas is one of only three southern states to have a mechanism for citizen petitions. Mississippi and Florida are the other two southern states. Why do you think that is, and how is Arkansas kind of different from those two states?
Well, it's a unique history. The direct democracy really emanated out of two movements, political movements in the early 20th century, the populist movement and the progressive movement. And Arkansas, compared to most other southern states, had strains of populism and progressivism in the general public and in the political leadership. And that really resulted in the 19-teens, in a major effort, the direct democracy process being inserted in the Constitution. It took a lot of campaigns, and it took some court battles, but finally by 1920 it was cemented, and what we have now is pretty much still in place. At that time, in most other southern states, there wasn't that populist progressive leadership, and so it just didn't happen. Mississippi did have a version inserted, but Mississippi has much higher percentages of voters that need to sign petitions to get it activated. Florida's came online much later, and they did a big constitutional overhaul later on. They added it then, but theirs is different in that it requires 60% of the vote at the election for it to go into effect. And so because Florida's a very expensive state, because it's large population, it tends to not be used very much there either. And so Arkansas really stands out as the state that in the South that's the easiest for this to be activated.
You've looked at some of the activity and success rates over about a 70-year period on this subject. What did you discover?
Well, we get constitutional amendments and initiated acts and referenda put on the ballot from two streams. First off, there's the legislative stream, and they can send three constitutional amendments out every cycle. And then, of course, there's the stuff that comes through the petition process. The first stream has remained fairly steady across time. You know, the legislature has kind of sent out a number a decade. The exception was in the 70s. There was kind of a 60s and 70s kind of a step back by the legislature, and that's because during that period there were several constitutional reform measures out there, whole new constitutions, and so the legislature just wasn't sending out amendments to a document that might be changing. The people, though, the patterns have been real different there, and we see a lot of activity in the early decades of this period. So in the 30s and 40s, there was a lot of activity, and then it really kind of receded in terms of the popularity. And then what's interesting is that nationally, we see that same pattern until the 70s and 80s, when nationally in states like California and Arizona, there's this big burst of direct democracy. We didn't see that big comeback for direct democracy in Arkansas. What we did see, however, that while the number of measures put out there for the voters to consider has not gone back up, the passage rate has improved in these last couple of decades. And that's a really interesting question. I don't have a grand answer, but I do think, a couple of things were probably at work. Some of these things that have been put to the people, both by the legislature and through the petition process, are things that had been considered in the constitutional revision process, and they were seen as pretty good ideas, but didn't get passed because the Constitution didn't get changed. And so I think that's some of it. And I think in addition, in these latter years, the people who've gone out and paid the money to get initiatives put on the ballot, and it now does cost money in a way that it did in the past, have also done good polling and good research to know what's actually going to be passed by the people once it gets on the ballot.
Do you think direct democracy is an underutilized campaign tactic in Arkansas? Do you think we will see it utilized more as the whole process gets more sophisticated?
I think it is underused, and I think Arkansas is a state where both on both sides of the political spectrum, there, you can think of things that could be put in place through the initiative process. I think what's interesting is we don't have, because we don't do it a lot, even though it's not hard to do it here, we don't have kind of the homegrown institutions that other states have that go out and do this every cycle in a very sophisticated way. Instead, it's happened in a more haphazard way, and I think it's one reason we saw such problems this cycle is that there aren't the practices and patterns of in this state. Instead, it tends to happen here when somebody has the ability to write a big check and make it happen, or when churches in particular get engaged and they can then very quickly get it done because of people coming together in church and the signatures being put together. I think what may well happen, though, is more sophisticated organizations grow up across time that do this in a more routinized way, and that actually then kind of institutionalizes the practice in a way we haven't seen to date.
Jay Barth is a political science professor at Hendricks College. He discussed the process of direct democracy with Roby Brock from our partner, TalkBusiness.net.
Support for TalkBusiness.net on Ozarks at Large is provided by Mitchell Williams Law, providing strategic counsel on a variety of sophisticated legal matters since 1954. Mitchell Williams Law Firm combines decades of diverse professional experience to clients across the U.S. Today, the firm employs nearly 80 attorneys from 4 offices in Arkansas, Texas, and New York. Online at MitchellWilliamsLaw.com. And Bank of the Ozarks, committed to helping business owners succeed by combining the tools and services businesses need with accessible experience and knowledge. More information at BankOzarks.com. And Verizon, offering a wide selection of productivity-enhancing tablets for small business, including the Apple iPad. More information at a Verizon Communications store near you or online at vzw.com/smallbusiness. And CEG Partners, using empirical data to better understand your customers' experiences and their loyalties. More information at cegpartners.com. Of August, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Becca Martin-Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers, with us.
This is an exhibit that should be close to all our hearts. On the Air, 50 Years of Broadcasting in Fort Smith.
Right.
I really want to see this.
It features microphones, antique radios, a range of various eras of televisions, a mock radio control room, and more. It's on exhibit through the end of the year at the Fort Smith Museum of History, and the opening reception is at 5:30 tonight.
Why? Give me a reason, Christina, we would not be at this.
I think we should take a field trip. That's what I was getting ready to say. Field
okay.
trip.
All right.
I love field trips. I'll meet you.
Mm-hmm.
And Saving Grace, a romantic comedy, opens at 6 tonight at Stone's Throw Dinner Theater in Carthage, Missouri. And tickets for that are $10 to $22 at 417-358-9665.
Thank you, Becca.
Thanks, Becca. Becca Martin-Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
On this week's Generic Blues Show, we play the first couple tracks from Michael Burke's new CD. It's called Show of Strength. It goes on sale next week. This is the album that he recorded prior to his untimely death on May 6th of this year. And that's the Generic Blues Show, every Friday night at 9 o'clock. We'll see you then.
KUAF is supported by CertaPro Painters, serving residential and commercial clients with interior and exterior painting, plus interior design, deck and fence staining, and specialty finishes. Locally owned and operated by Aaron Lewis. Estimates and information available by calling 1-800-GO-CERTA or on the web, CertaProPainters.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. In 3 weeks, the air above the Little Rock Air Force Base will be busy. The acclaimed U.S. Navy Blue Angels are the headliners for the Little Rock Air Show at the base on September 8th and 9th. Also scheduled to perform that weekend are pilots flying vintage aircraft, the Canadian Forces Skyhawks Parachute Demonstration Team, an in-the-air comedy act called Otto the Helicopter, and others. This month, I reached Lieutenant Mallory Glass, the Little Rock Air Force Base's Chief of Public Affairs, and I asked her how an air show is put together.
It all starts right here with just wanting to show off what this base does every single day. And we love our C-130 mission, and we always want to show our taxpayers, our community, our wonderful neighbors, what we do right here at Little Rock Air Force Base. And we are the home of C-130 Combat Airlift. And it also starts with, you know, inviting the Blue Angels. We have to put that on their calendar 2 years out, actually.
The Blue Angels, of course, they're synonymous with the epitome of what can happen in the air. What can people that are there the 8th and 9th see the Blue Angels do?
Well, we're really excited to have the Blue Angels. We love showing off the fact that here at Little Rock Air Force Base, we work with every member of the Department of Defense. We know they're Navy and we're Air Force, but we're all going to get along that weekend and have fun. But they're going to be up there doing all kinds of awe-inspiring performances that you have to come out and see it to see it, to believe it.
And one of the great things about this is the cost to get in.
Yes. Main thing about this air show is it is free. We want to show off our base. And a new thing this year is you can get a reserved seat if you want. Go to littlerockairshow.com and you can reserve a seat for a nominal fee. And that way you are front row center and you can sit down and watch the show. Or, of course, you can just come here and all you have to do is bring a refillable water bottle because it's going to be hot.
Yeah, there's no getting away from that.
Exactly.
Now, something else that will be happening is Fat Albert?
Yes, and we love Fat Albert here at Little Rock because he's a 130, but with a little bit extra. Fat Albert does his own show, and Fat Albert was actually here over the winter, just getting refurbished by some of our amazing maintainers.
Well, when you say Fat Albert has more, like what more is there to Fat Albert?
Well, Fat Albert it used to be that Fat Albert had almost like a jet pack on it and can go much faster than 130s, but we have some very trained pilots in there that will put on a show in the 130 of Fat Albert.
Also, the Canadian Forces Skyhawks?
Yes, we're actually going to have quite a few Canadians here. They're going to be bringing in F-18 also, and then we'll have the Canadian Skyhawks jumping out and showing their amazing paratrooper skills.
A bit of Northwest Arkansas will be there as well. Mike Rinker, who grew up in Elkins.
Yes, Mike Rinker and Pink Floyd. Uh-huh. We'll be seeing them too this year. We have all kinds of acts coming.
And there's actually something that doesn't fly, or mm-hmm. The jet truck, right?
Oh, yes.
Tell me about this jet truck.
This jet truck is something to behold. It's the Air National Guard's truck, and it literally just has a jet on the back of it. And it's spitting out fire, going down as fast as it can down the runway.
How does one get the idea? You may not be able to answer this, but how does one get the idea to build a jet truck?
I have no idea. We have some creative people, and we love to put on a show.
Now, you mentioned it at the beginning of our conversation that one of the things you wanted to do was show off what happens at the base every day. There aren't jet trucks there every day, I assume. But what does happen every day?
Well, at Little Rock Air Force Base, we we have C-130s that we have people deployed every single day. And these 130s are over in Afghanistan supplying with the fight with what we like to call beans and bullets and people. So what we're going to do is we're going to have a day in Afghanistan exercise where we drop about 200 to 300 Army personnel, paratroopers, jumping out of about 10 C-130s. It's going to be quite the sight to see. And also, I mean, it's It's going to be everything from showing off our medical group to our security forces with their dogs. Everyone's going to be out in full force.
A lot of this obviously is very serious stuff. It's precision, and it's knowing what you're doing in years of not even practice isn't even the right word, but years of work.
Yeah.
But Otto the helicopter.
The helicopter.
And I don't know if the people behind Otto the helicopter would like this analogy, but Otto the helicopter kind of seems like the rodeo clown of the air show. In that, I mean, the rodeo clowns do a very important job, right?
I mean, we love to entertain and we love to show off what we do, and Otto definitely gives the kids something to smile about, that's for sure. And speaking of, there is going to be a kid zone there for kids to play and just kind of for mom and dads to give them that moment of, okay, I'm tired of looking at airplanes now. I just want to run around.
And that will happen.
Yes, exactly.
Now, and again, it's the 8th and 9th of September. There is a possibility for reserved seats.
Yes.
You mentioned bringing the refillable water bottle because even though we'll be closing in on fall, it's still likely to be very hot.
Yes.
Anything else people should bring? Some people might. Should some people consider earplugs?
I mean, you can bring earplugs. Make sure to bring sunscreen.
Mm-hmm.
Always bring sunscreen. We don't want any issues there. But we are going to have what we're calling 4 acres of shade. One of our hangars will be open for people to go in, cool down. Food will be sold there. So just you can bring a lawn chair if you want. And just pop a seat and watch the amazing show.
You can find out more by going to littlerockairshow.com. If the Blue Angels came to you and said, you know what, we'll take you up and we'll do the full show. You can experience whatever, the flying upside down, the rolls, the whatever. Would you do it?
Oh, in a heartbeat.
Really?
In a heartbeat. I love roller coasters, and I think that would be the ultimate roller coaster.
Well, that's one way to put it.
That is one way to put it, yes. For
I
sure.
look forward to hearing about it from you.
I won't be up
no.
there, that's for sure.
You can go before me. If I ever get the chance, I will defer to you.
Oh, well, thank you.
I mentioned littlerockairshow.com. And for people who might not be experienced with air shows, you know, there are the aficionados who seek them out, and it's something they really like. But for people who are hearing this and thinking, well, I really want to go, but I'm not used to this, we should explain that this is, when it comes to the bill and the performers, this is a big deal.
Yes, it's definitely a big deal. Not only are you getting to see civilian aircraft, military aircraft, we are opening the gates of Little Rock Air Force Base for the community to see and just, you know, be entertained and at the same time understand where their taxpayer dollars are going.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your time. I look forward to the show in September.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much. We're really excited. September 8th and 9th.
Kyle talked with Lieutenant Mallory Glass, the Chief of Public Affairs at Little Rock Air Force Base, about the Little Rock Air Show. The two-day event is September 8th and 9th at the base near Jacksonville, Arkansas. You can find out more by going to littlerockairshow.com. At KUAF, we continue to greatly enjoy our new facility at the corner of Mountain and School Streets in downtown Fayetteville. But what most listeners don't know is that we have, surrounding the facility, a very old-fashioned, some might say, even ancient, garden. But Ozarks at Large nature essayist Joe Neal took notice.
The words Prairie Township may still be recognized by a few local surveyors, but mention it to any one of Fayetteville's 73,000 folks, and you get blank stares. Prairie? Township? Once upon a time, Frank Pierce snuck up on a herd of buffalo in what, within a few years, would be Prairie Township. Almost 200 years later, we call it Fayetteville. Maybe this is a good time to listen in on buffaloes. I recorded them talking about something at the Nature Conservancy's Tallgrass Prairie Preserve in northeastern Oklahoma. There were bison here two centuries ago, but no iPhones, Walmart, Tyson's, University of Arkansas, and no KUAF. Open prairie with native bluestem grasses and sunflowers rule where today is an overflowing farmer's market. The original Tallgrass Prairie extended across 200 million acres north, south, and west of northwest Arkansas. It was a country of sunflowers taller than a horseback rider like Frank Pierce. It was Native America, too. Pierce hoped to avoid buffalo hunting Osages as he was sneaking around in a country then closed to white settlers. I was thinking about this during a recent walk around flower gardens at KUF Studios, corner of Mountain and School in Fayetteville. The gardens honor the memory of Barbara Dillard and the Parks family of Prairie Grove. In early July, they were ablaze with tall spikes of purple gay feathers. They blaze on even in high heat and extended drought. In late July, glorious masses of black-eyed Susan steal the eye show along the streets and parking areas of this older section of Fayetteville. Cardinals sing even in modern Prairie Township. Here's one now. Not all plants in the gardens are local. The lovely Japanese maples come to mind here, but many are relatives of grasses and flowers with a long botanical lineage here. Indian grass and big bluestem compete for attention with bright flowers. Pollinating bees and butterflies make the flower beds a busy place. This is about as close a connection as possible to prairie days in central urban Fayetteville. And the garden is something for us all year. Last winter, when the year's flowers were gone, I enjoyed the tall remains of big bluestem grass with its seed head shaped like a turkey's foot, and what was left of the fluffy plume atop Indian grass. This little prairie patch can be relegated to a blur in the hurry along School Street, but there's a treat for walkers or drivers with a moment to spare. Here is a space, tied to local history, to pause and enjoy.
Joe Neal is co-author of Arkansas Birds, published by the University of Arkansas Press. His latest book, In the Province of Birds, a Western Arkansas memoir, is published by Half Acre Press.
Another 10,000 baby boomers turned 65 today, give or take a few, and a new survey shows that overall they're happy, healthy, and optimistic about their future. That optimism fades, though, when it comes to paying their medical bills and for Medicare. I'm John Donvan, Aging in America. Next, Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation, this afternoon at 1 on KUAF 91.3 FM.
Get ready to see more work zones on Arkansas's interstates. Work on over 450 miles of interstate highway will begin this fall and continue over the next 4 or 5 years as another interstate rehabilitation project is about to begin. Jonathan Reeves from our partner station KASU in Jonesboro has this report.
10 years ago, Arkansas was in the midst of a multi-million dollar interstate rehabilitation program. The State Highway Transportation Department used bond money to repave, and in some cases, totally rebuild sections of Arkansas's interstate highways. Starting in November, another round of interstate rehabilitations will begin, as over 400 miles will be covered over several years. That'll mean numerous work zones on the highways, slow traffic, and drivers trying to find alternate routes. Arkansas Highway Transportation Department spokesman Randy Ort takes us back to 1999 when the groundwork was laid for the first rehabilitation project.
Arkansas had some of the worst interstate highways in the country. And fortunately, the governor at the time, Governor Huckabee, the Highway Commission, and the legislature put their heads together and authorized the use of bonds, sell some bonds, to allow Arkansas to embark on this very large-scale interstate rehabilitation program. We started that back in 1999. That's when we actually were authorized to do the work. The work actually began in the year 2000. So from 2000 through about 2005, 2006, we saw improvements to almost 60% of our interstate highway miles here in Arkansas. So it was a very massive program, about 355 miles. It was also a very successful program. Like I said before, we literally had some of the worst interstates in the country. But when we finished up in about 2006, we had one of the best, if not the best, interstate highway systems in the country. So it was a very successful program in that regard, and I think it was a very successful program in the eyes of the public as well. The legislature in 2000, or a couple of sessions ago, authorized us to go back to a vote of the people to see if we could do that again. And that election was held in November of 2011. It passed with 81% of the vote supporting it. So, again, I think that's a testament to what the people saw occur about 10 years ago.
Ord says one of the first projects will start at Interstate 55 in West Memphis. There may not be a lot of work that takes place this winter, but he says next year more work will be done.
We're going to award the first contracts to begin some of the work in November. Now, granted, it's limited how much work may actually take place through the winter months. That's why I think by next spring you'll see that work going full speed. And you'll see some additional projects come on board through next year. I think right now we've got six or seven contracts underway on interstate highways in Arkansas. I think by the end of 2013, that number is probably going to triple. People got very creative when we did this about 10 years ago, finding ways to get from point A to point B. And we encourage that again this time. You know, look for alternate routes. Be aware that this construction is going on. In many cases, traffic's going to be narrowed down to one lane in each direction. You need to plan accordingly. Allow plenty of extra time to get where you're going. Or look at alternate routes. And again, if you use an alternate route, that may very well take you a little bit longer as well. So we just want people to know that's coming up.
From 2000 to 2005, about 60% of the state's interstates were improved, roughly covering about 355 miles. This next rehabilitation project that starts in November will take about 4 years to complete, as about 450 miles of interstate highways will be covered. Or it says a major interstate project is taking place on Interstate 40 between Hazen and Brinkley. That's an area that was shut down due to historic river flooding last year. Or it says the Cache River Bridge and the White River Bridge are being worked on, as well as approaches to those bridges are being raised to prevent river flooding from shutting down the interstate again. Or it tells where some of the interstate rehabilitation projects will be at this time around.
Well, a lot of people are aware of the work we have going on right now on Interstate 40 between Little Rock and Memphis over around the White River. That project should be wrapping up in a little less than a year now, sometime late next spring, early next summer. But we're going to be starting work other parts of that section of I-40 between Little Rock and Memphis. We're going to have work underway on I-40 between Little Rock and Fort Smith. We're going to have work on Interstate 540 in Fort Smith. We're going to have work on Interstate 55 going from West Memphis and heading northward, and additional work on Interstate 530 going from Little Rock down towards Pine Bluff. So it's really going to be spread throughout the state. In other words, you're not going to be able to avoid it.
Bids for the first projects in interstate rehabilitation will be awarded sometime in September. I'm Jonathan Reeves reporting in Jonesboro.
Hello, this is Robert Ginsberg, your host for Shades of Jazz, every Friday night from 10 till midnight. On tonight's program, we'll hear music from Stan Getz, Sonny Fortune, Gretchen Parlato, Joe Lovano, Roger Humphreys, and Sonny Stitt, just to name a few. That's Shades of Jazz, 10 p.m. on Friday nights.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
And going to have another trivia question today.
Okay.
Going to give away, again, just like yesterday, 6 Northwest Arkansas Naturals tickets. They're actually vouchers that you then exchange at the will call window. Good for any home game.
It's a lot of tickets.
It is. You can take a family and a half. Well, or half a family, depending on the size of your family, I suppose. And also 4 tickets to any Malco Movie Area Theater. So 10 tickets total. The thing about the Naturals is they don't have that many home games left. Minor league season coming to an end. I'm going to tell you more about this question than you want to know.
Okay.
So, first of all, I had to do morning edition this morning.
Right.
Because Pete Hartman is out. He and Christina have their a new addition to their family, so he's taking some time off. So I don't know if you have this experience, but sometimes when I have to do morning edition, I can't sleep very well because I'm afraid I'm going to sleep through the alarm.
Right, right.
Of course not.
Yeah.
Right. I woke up at like, 1:45 and could not get back to sleep. So this is an insomnia-induced trivia question.
Okay, should be interesting.
And I think it's Google-proof. I don't think you can look this up in the 5 minutes time you have. Okay. According to the U.S. House of Representatives website, there have been 120 men and women who have served the state of Arkansas either in the U.S. House or the U.S. Senate.
Okay.
In Congress or Senate. 120. My question is, how many of those 120 men or women that have served Arkansas in the House or Senate in Washington, D.C., how many of them were born in Arkansas?
Huh.
120 total have served. How many? Now, keep in mind that when Arkansas first had people serving, we hadn't been a state long enough.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously many of our early, so there it is. 120 have served. How many were born in Arkansas?
Okay.
If you have a guess, or if by some chance you actually know the answer, then you've had insomnia too, I think, you can give us a call.
1-800-522-5823.
We'll take the closest, either above or below. If there's a tie, we'll pick a name out of the ceramic cow.
Okay. Good luck.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 17th of August, 2012. It's the birthday of Jonathan Franzen, born Western Springs, Illinois, 1959, author of the novels Freedom and The Corrections, and most recently an essay collection, Farther Away. Jonathan Franzen, who said, "I come from a kind of old-fashioned Midwest, and I live in a techno-corporate, post-ironic, cool, late Eastern world. The two worlds hardly ever talk to each other, but they're completely, constantly talking to one another inside me. I have my parents talking to me in my head, and then other parts of myself talking back. I think this is potentially an interesting conversation." It's the birthday of the poet Ted Hughes, born in West Riding, Yorkshire, 1930. First collection came out in 1957, The Hawk in the Rain. Ted Hughes became known for his dramatic, mythological themes, sometimes writing from the point of view of animals, especially crow. Married the poet Sylvia Plath in 1956, who committed suicide 7 years later. He administered her literary estate, didn't talk about her publicly until his collection of poems, Birthday Letters, came out in 1998. It's the birthday of the writer who said, "Between two evils, I like to pick the one I haven't tried before." Mae West, born Brooklyn, 1893. Davy Crockett, born on this day 1786 in Greene County, Tennessee, served 3 terms in the U.S. House of Representatives and was defeated by a lawyer named Andrew Huntsman, who had a peg leg. Davy Crockett said, "Since you have chosen to elect a man with a timber toe to succeed me, you may all go to hell and I will go to Texas." and he left the next day and was killed the following year at the Battle of the Alamo. It's the birthday of Sylvia Nasar, born in Bavaria in 1947, author of the book A Beautiful Mind, about a brilliant economist who struggled with severe mental illness. It's the birthday of the man who wrote an exposé about fast food restaurants, Eric Schlosser, New York City, 1959. The book was Fast Food Nation, The Dark Side of the All-American Meal, about disturbing practices in the fast food, factory farming, and meatpacking industries. Here's a poem for today by Ted Hughes entitled Perfect Light. There you are, in all your innocence, sitting among your daffodils, as in a picture posed, as for the title, Innocence. Perfect light in your face lights it up like a daffodil. Like any one of those daffodils, it was to be your only April on earth among your daffodils. In your arms, like a teddy bear, your new son, only a few weeks into his innocence, mother and infant, as in the holy portrait, and beside you, laughing up at you, your daughter, barely two, like a daffodil, you turn your face down to her, saying something, your words were lost in the camera. And the knowledge inside the hill on which you were sitting, a moated fort hill bigger than your house, failed to reach the picture. While your next moment, coming towards you like an infantryman, returning slowly out of no man's land, bowed under something, never reached you, simply melted into the perfect light. Perfect Light, a poem by Ted Hughes from Birthday Letters, published by Ferris Strauss Giroux and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, iPad users can download the three most recent issues of Poetry Magazine, celebrating its centennial in 2012 at poetryfoundation.org. Written by Holly Vanderhaar, edited by Joy Biles. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And it is now time to answer our trivia question.
Right.
Do you remember what it was?
I remember the question.
Well, out of the 120 men and women who have served the state of Arkansas, either in the U.S. House or the U.S. Senate, the question was, how many of them were born in Arkansas?
My guess is less than half.
You are correct. 54.
Okay.
So just under half.
Right.
60 would have been half. 54 were born in Arkansas. 17 in Tennessee. And then 7 in Missouri, including J. William Fulbright, who we think of as a Fayetteville native.
Mm-hmm.
His family had moved to Fayetteville before he was 1 year old, before his first birthday, I believe. But anyway, born in Missouri. 6 born in North Carolina, 6 born in Mississippi, 5 in Alabama, and so forth. One person, Congressman William Joseph Hines, who served in the 43rd Congress beginning in 1873, he was born in Ireland. And emigrated to
Not even born in the United States.
Emigrated to the U.S. as a child. So there you go. People who are closest win. If there's a tie, we're going to pull a name out of the ceramic cow. Now, in a hurry, I need to read the underwriter. You have it. Okay. KUAF is supported by Packrat Outdoor Center in Fayetteville, dedicated to environmental responsibility and serving the area for 37 years. Packrat offers a selection of footwear, canoes, and kayaks, camping gear, plus urban and outdoor clothing. A fan page is available on Facebook or packrat.biz for the events calendar or more information.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Bentonville, Fort Smith, and Knoxville.
Knoxville, north of Russellville?
Yes.
And the significance?
I was traveling on I-40 yesterday, and my stepfather said that Knoxville is where you lose KUAR and pick up KUAF.
There you go. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Thanks so much for listening.